Welcome back to Avery Adventures Podcast. It's early September. Lots of nice deer and elk already hitting the ground, and I'm sure that a few more will hit the ground in the next few weeks. Unfortunately, I'm taking the month off. Tanya has hip surgery tomorrow. Definitely a sad day not to hunt elk, not to hunt bugling elk. We'll still make it out in October, November to try to find some. But anyways, as always, you can get 20% off by using the code FATKID at mountainops.com. We'd really appreciate it. And also check out rockslide.com. I get questions every day about gear, and I would say 90 to 95% of them can be answered in the forums or in the actual articles at rockslide.com. So I'd appreciate you checking it out. Today on the show, we have Frank Galley, a Marine Scout sniper and the owner of Sniper's Hide. He's an instructor. He's a competitive shooter. Frank is a very polarizing guy. People love him. People hate him. There's really no middle ground with Frank. I met him at the FTW Ranch at a Swarovski shoot about 3 or 4 months ago. I found him to be a good guy. He's blunt. He's to the point. Being prior military, he likes to talk a lot of shit, which I appreciate. He was the first to jump in and help people that needed help, and he didn't preach to them. He explained it to them on their level, which I found refreshing. So anyways, here's Frank. Oh, shit, I almost forgot. We still have 7 gift cards to give away, $100 gift cards from Mountain Ops for leaving a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. And the winner this podcast is Little Josie 495. Again, that's Little Josie 495. Get a hold of me at Ryan at AveryAdventures.com or Tanya at AveryAdventures.com, and we'll get you that $100 gift card for Mountain Ops. All right, here's Frank for reals.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
If you guys don't know who Frank is, a lot of our crowd is in the hunting side. Frank is one of the, I would say, we just talked about this a minute ago, shooting ambassadors. He owns Sniper's Hide. He's a former, or not a former Marine, he is a Marine Scout sniper, or was a Marine Scout sniper. He's a great teacher. I went into it, I didn't know him from Adam, and the thing about Frank is he's loud, he gets a little obnoxious, but he teaches, and that's very rare to me in the shooting industry. You got a lot of egos, but I'll tell you, the short time that I've met Frank and shot with Frank, he's always teaching, which is, it's unique, I guess, to me. So, Frank, do you just naturally always teach, or is that just in your blood?
Yeah, I mean, it's in the blood, and I mean, 7 years down in Texas teaching, and I've been around this for so long. I want to extend my knowledge to the next guy and take away. I mean, it's all about the education. We know we work online. There's so much bad information, and I think it's part of my job is to kind of help people weed through that bad stuff. So I'd rather teach you the right way than, you know, kind of let you sit there and flounder.
Yeah, on that teaching note, a few weeks ago at the Sniper's Hide Cup, you actually took a young lady out on the course, and that was pretty interesting. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, there's a up-and-coming PRS shooter. Her name is Mary Beth Olson. She's 9 years old, and this little girl is a hammer. I mean, it's basically, there's the target, point her at it, let her go, and she hits. And so I had the Sniper's Hide Team Challenge, and I didn't want to just hang around because Carl Taylor from In Motion hosts it, and he takes care of so much that I said, listen, this year, instead of me driving around in Glenn Seekin's Razor terrorizing the neighborhood, I'm going to shoot it and take Mary Beth with me. Gotcha. and help her kind of move to the next level with this stuff.
So that was a pretty much planned thing from the get-go?
No, the opportunity, at first I wasn't going to, and then talking with Jim from Prime, he sponsors Mary Beth ammo-wise. Gotcha. And we were talking about her because she had just shot the Gap Grind. And I said to Jim, I said, well, if she just shot the Gap Grind and wants to shoot the cup, I'll give her a slot and I'll shoot with her as her teammate. And so that he kind of reached out to her and her dad and they said, okay. And so that's kind of what made it. But originally I had no intentions on shooting my own match that way, you know?
Well, that's pretty cool that you did that.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, she's a trooper. We did 10.6 miles in those mountains in Colville over the 2 days. She carried her own kit. She was out there shooting these stages, and it's just seeing her engage these targets off of tripods, off of different stuff. it was refreshing. It was zero attitude. She's a sponge. And I love that.
Cool. Let's take this back to the beginning. Kind of take us through how a guy from Connecticut becomes a Marine Scout sniper.
Originally I'm from Bridgeport, which is city, you know, but we moved when I was younger to a place called Shelton, Connecticut, which is the dairy farm areas. And my best friends owned the land for the cows and the dairy farm. We shot air rifles constantly, 22s. I mean, we were out every day shooting stuff. And so, you know, that was one of the things. And, you know, I went to a tech school. I didn't even go to a real high school. I was supposed to be an electrician. And, you know, so I was the only guy in my class until after I graduated boot camp to even go in the military. And it was just one of those things that I said, hey, I'm going to be a scout sniper, and actually went to sniper school as a PFC. I did everything I could to get into sniper school and, you know, just made it happen.
Now, people that don't know, you're not the part that I was a grunt. So the impressive part to me is you're not an imposing individual, and and you're carrying loads that are three quarters or almost as much as you weigh. That's the impressive part to me.
Yeah, I went into Marine Corps at 102 pounds. And when I got out, I weighed 125. Dude, I carried the radio. I did all that. I would smoke people because I no quit. You know what I mean? It was during force marches when I was a corporal, I'd have guys falling back who were twice the size of me. And I'd be like, hey, dude, give me your rifle. I'll carry it for you because you can't handle it. And then I'd never give it back to them. You know, I'd like, go get your staff sergeant because this rifle's mine till you get it. But it tuck your chin and go.
When you got into the actual sniper part, was your size a hindrance, or was it helpful, or was it how'd that work for you?
It helped a little bit, probably on stocks and concealments. But I mean, the gear and everything you got to carry, if you let it, it'll smoke you. I mean, make no mistakes. There was probably times I peed a little bit of blood from having too big a ruck on my kidneys and things like that. But you know, being in Lejeune, I had a little bit more of an advantage because it's flat versus California with the hills, you know, but I never found it to really, growing up, my whole family's short, you know, I have a ton of relatives. I had no concept that you weren't supposed to not be able to do it. Gotcha. So, you know, it was just kind of, hey man, if you want it, go take it. And that's what we did. And that was what I did in sniper school. I just pushed harder.
I think the one thing you hear about any of these military schools, or you hear about pass or fail, the main thing that gets guys through the mindset is failing was never an option. Quitting was never in the vocabulary. Is that kind of the same track you went down?
Absolutely, man. Like I said, you just got to push and go for it. I mean, I loved carrying the radio, and the Prick 77s back then were not light.
Right.
And so it's like, well, I liked it. So I didn't look at it as, wow, this hurts, or wow, this is bad. You know, it was something that I wanted to do. I had an interest in, you know, that's what I did.
Is there anything you would tell young aspiring Marine Scout snipers before they actually get there? Any advice?
PT and land nav. I mean, everybody tends to focus on the shooting part of it. Uh-huh. And shooting is not where everyone fails. We fail more people with the land nav, observations, in that aspect of it. You know, if you fail any one subject twice, whether it's a written test or the field test, you're out. And so most people focus on the shooting part and miss all the other things that you have to do. And so that's the key, is definitely your mind's got to be right, and you got to bear down and study.
Gotcha. So getting past that, how many years was that of your life? How many years were you in the Marines?
I just did the 4 years there, and then I did 3 years of active reserve with the National Guard in Connecticut. It was 4 years with the Marine Corps.
How long after that did you get into the actual competitive shooting part?
Oh, quite a while. That didn't start. I started Sniper's Hide in 2000, and I got approached by Rifles Only in about 2002. Now, I'd shot some small stuff in, Raton and different places earlier, 2001, but it really took off to what you see now is when I connected with Rifles Only down in Texas. and Jacob had come up to Connecticut to recruit me. And so once that happened, it was you know, really fast after that.
Nice. So you started that. That's down in Texas.
Rifles only. Yeah. Sniper Sight started out of Connecticut, but I ended up going down to Texas. And then after that, pretty much didn't leave for 7 years and did 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and lived in a fifth wheel down on the range, you know.
Wow.
Was that like the infancy, that time frame of like what is now the PRS? You know, it was what did you start in the competitive shooting? That's a broad, you know, broad stroke. What was competitive shooting back then?
Yeah, absolutely. It started at Rifles Only. I mean, they were doing these type of PRS matches back in 96 down there.
Huh.
And they were tiny. If you look at the pictures on the wall of them, there was only like 10 or 15 guys doing it. And then that's what Jacob brought me down to hold the Sniper Side Cup in that 2002, 2003. Once we started that, we were the originators because PRS started on Sniper's Hide. And they looked at it as, you know, the Sniper's Hide Cup and we had the Shooter's Bash was, I mean, if registration opened at 10:01, it was sold out. We were filling matches up like nobody's business. And then these guys kind of said, well, how do we get in on that? And then it expanded out of Texas. You know, these matches grew down there and then just caught fire. People who traveled, and then you saw them in Florida, Arizona, and these different places. But that's the originators, Jacob, at Rifles Only.
All right. We're going to jump ship there and go back to the actual competitive, the competitive part in a minute, but take us through why and how did you start Sniper's Hide?
Actually, the funny story is I had just gotten a divorce and needed something to do. And we were talking on an internet forum, and, there was a forum we were using called like shooters.com, and their software kept crashing. And so somebody said, well, you know, who can do this? So I made a website off of a front page, just template.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Sniper's Hide grew, because we were tired of, you know, we'd get 10 guys on this other forum and it would crash.
Gotcha.
So it was like, hey, let's just throw some money at it. Let's make our own forum. And that's how it started originally.
And you started in 2000, you said?
Yes.
How long before you figured out, man, I might have something here?
It took about 3 years. I mean, I didn't monetize it or do anything that way for 8 years. I left it free and no ads or anything like that for 8 years of its existence. After that, it was getting so big that people were like, hey, you know, we're willing to throw some money at you. So it was like, gee, maybe I should start putting some ads up and some things like that. But it was probably 3 years when I saw it really take off and think, hey, there's something here.
And then fast forward, you sold part of it to Scout Media. Is that how it went?
It was a lease deal. It was kind of be part of their network. My goal at the time was to bring it more mainstream, because we were getting more into the PRS type of competitions, the sports side of it. It was moving away from Sniper's Hide to competition shooting, PRS, you know, type stuff. And Scout had come to me and said, you know, we have this sports network, 25 million users, blah, blah, blah. And so it was a lease agreement. I never gave up any of my rights or my trademarks or anything like that. They were basically just paying me to be in their network. It would be the equivalent of, you know, somebody said to you, hey, take Avery out of your house and bring it to the strip mall down the road and we'll give you free rent, you know? So that's kind of where it went.
And then past that, they kind of shit the bed on you and you brought it back.
Yeah, they were complete assholes. I mean, if they did half of what they promised, it would have been good. But they filed bankruptcy. The CEO squandered like $39 million. And even when they ended up selling it to CBS, they still lost like $10 million in the sale. And as soon as CBS bought it, I didn't want anything. And it was a good way to get out of my contract. I still had almost 9 months left on my contract. And I just turned around and said to CBS, you are the most anti-gun group out there. I want nothing to do with you, so I'm out of there. And so that was an easy way for me to break my contract.
So now you're back in full control and it's back to Sniper's Hide?
Yep, it's me. They're all gone. They burned me. It was kind of, you know, it taught me a lesson, put it that way. You know, one that can tend to hurt with some people. But yeah, it's all me now. I'm it. I'm back on my servers. I'm back doing my thing, and it's working out much better already.
Gotcha. So what do you got going on? What's the 1 year forecast for Sniper Side? What's Frank doing?
I'm basically retweaking. I'm just in the process of finishing up getting the software back to where I want. I made a lot of changes to the software and upgrades. In 3 years, there was a lot of change. So I had to kind of fix all that. Once that's done, it's not coming down to content, but my training is taking off again pretty hardcore because now people have access to me. And so I've been traveling a lot training, but the forecast is more of the same and to keep putting out good content and to make sure that I can take care of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of studied up on you after we met down there and, man, you put out really solid content and some pretty funny stuff.
Yeah, and that's my passion, man. I love the video side of it now. I love doing that and mixing up a little bit of the teaching like we talked about and the educating. I don't just want to do infomercial after infomercial, which is some of what we're doing, you know, because people send us product. They want us to review. They want our opinion. And that tends to get infomercially. So I try to mix that with some form of education,
right?
Why you'd want this, why it would help and things like that.
No, that makes total sense. Getting back on the competitive shooting side, you recently put out a paper, document, statement, whatever you want to call it. And I've been asked, you know, what I thought about you, what you've said, and I really don't know anything about the competitive shooting side, but straight to the point question is, what is your beef with the PRS and NRL?
They're a governing body that refuses to govern. That's my beef, that they have, let's say, and this isn't out, and I made it broad. I did that on purpose. I was asked to write that letter. I wasn't even there. They called me at 9:30 at night and they said, Frank, you got to blow these guys up because they're really getting out of control with this air of entitlement. And when I say these guys, again, that's like 10%. So that needs to be clarified because everyone took the letter sort of out of context and made it seem like I was talking to them.
Right.
What happened was there was a match at Rifles Only. The top 10, there was a $200,000 prize table. Okay. Wow. All this gear, all this stuff. The top 10 guys were given access to the prize table. Hang on one sec. I'm gonna pause really quick, can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me throw this mic thing. I have to use my Windows stuff, and it hates whatever reason working. Let me just give you some battery so my computer is yelling at me. I went from like a 50% down to like 8% in 2 seconds. All right, I'm good.
You're dying.
All right, repeat.
It's that
Sorry.
Fucking Mac, Frank. It's that fucking Mac.
No, I'm on a Windows thing, man. I'm on a Surface for Skype. Yeah. Anyway, so go back. Rifles Only had a competition, the Bushnell Brawl. Then they turned around and had this $200,000 prize table with all these PRS guys. Shooters 1 through 10 in the finishing order were given access to the prize table. And it was like, okay, well, then when that was over, Jacob said, I have 20 ROs. These guys all traveled, all this. I want my 20 ROs to go up to the prize table.
Gotcha.
Immediately, they started complaining, like the shooters, like, why are you giving my prize to a range officer? Where these matches don't work without range officers. As a match director myself, you got to beg people to come. You're not paying them.
Right.
It's their time. All this stuff. Well, even the funny thing, which people don't realize, George Gardner, who's an owner in the PRS, was there. When they started grumbling, he turned to one of his guys and he says, as soon as Frank finds out about this, it's on. And he knew right from the beginning that when it got down to me and hearing about it, I was going to be bent. Well, then 11 through the rest go to the prize table. 51st place. So after the ROs, after the top 10, the 51st place shooter won a free suppressor. So this is how much stuff was on the prize table.
They weren't hurting at the 51st prize.
Right. Well, then what they did, bunch of shooters got together, and 2 weeks after the match, wrote an anonymous letter to Jacob and said, how dare you do what you did? Forget it's his match. Forget he's been putting them on longer than anybody else. Well, they used an email scrubber so he couldn't reply to him and he couldn't chase it back. He was pissed. And that's when they got a hold of me and they said, listen, because I don't mind being, look at, they all think they're heroes. I get it. Every hero needs a villain. I'm happy to be your villain. You know? So he's like, nice. Frank, I want you to be just, you know what? Your typical Northeast guy. Just do it. And I did. That was the letter you read. A bunch of people knew about it behind the scenes. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so then it became Frank's bad, Frank's evil, Frank hates this, Frank hates that. In, you know, 11 years of stuff at Rifles Only with these competitions, we never had this drama over a prize table, over this stuff, because guys are trying to supplement their hobby with the prizes. They'll go up to the prize table, they get the most expensive thing they can to sell it. And that's really not, I mean, I get it, it's expensive, but the PRS is designed to be expensive. You have to shoot a lot of matches to qualify, and everybody's complaining, you know, to qualify for a PRS finale, it's a $15,000, $20,000 expenditure.
Yeah, right.
So it's turning people kind of a little ugly trying to make up that money where they're not really geared to afford it. So they're going to kind of say, if you showed up to a PRS match and you've only shot one, to them, you don't count. I'm doing the PRS series. I'm shooting the required amount of matches. I get the front of the line. You don't deserve to be in that line because I'm doing what's required of me. And that's what I don't like about it. And we've had issues with people breaking rules, getting caught cheating and doing stuff. And when you go to the PRS and say, look, this guy is bad, they do nothing. Because in reality, last year, only 178 people shot the required number of matches.
Gotcha.
So while there might be 1,500 PRS members, there is only around that 10-12% of them that are doing anything that is required. Now, the NRL guys are the disgruntled PRS people. They didn't like what the PRS was doing, so they took their ball, they made their own field, and they went home and said, well, we're going to do it our way. But they didn't learn from the mistakes the PRS has been making. Okay, there's some bright and shining of examples of what not to do. And they didn't learn that lesson. And so that's kind of when I got into it with them down in Texas. I'm like, tell me how you're doing it different. Tell me what's going on. Because if you do have it right, I'm happy to support you. They got it wrong. Where like Three Gun Nation, I mentioned in the letter, one of them. Mm-hmm. That's Ryan Castle. Ryan Castle was one of the guys in PRS doing match director stuff. Three Gun Nation, hired him. Well, he learned from the mistakes. He sees it and he's fixing it in Three Gun. And it's like, well, you know, there's some stuff that if you're going to do the same thing over and over again, we got no time for you. It's like, make this better. No, don't just make it the same on the other side. Gotcha. And so that's my beef with everybody.
So are you're saying like the PRS and not really the NRL yet because they're pretty new, but they've gotten away from bringing people to the sport and they made it more of an inclusive sport?
No, because they do some good stuff. Like the Gap Grind is awesome. But I'll give you an example. The Gap Grind is the pro-am event to bring new people in the sport. Uh-huh. They fill up the amateurs in minutes. There's still 40 pros that haven't stepped up to become an amateur's partner because there's nothing in it for some of these guys and they don't want to waste the money. So it's like, well, why aren't you giving back to something that you're taking from? You know, they really kind of struggle to fill. Now, they'll end up filling the pros because they'll call in favors, but the pros won't fill up to the last minute. Yeah, the thing is when people come who are new, see a guy do something wrong, get caught. I mean, they're catching guys on video. You still there? Because my thing just, these things to work, man. They want to always go into some mode, but I'm back. Yeah, so it's just one of those things, man. I don't understand why that it's like Jacob said to me in a recent call, it's how did they ruin something that we created for them that was handed on a silver platter?
Because it and was handed on a silver platter.
Well, there's because you know what? They all want to make money off of it. And yeah, we came at it where it wasn't secondary. Competitions were to kind of highlight our training because, you know, we taught two military classes to a civilian class. So we would take the lessons learned in training and turn them into a competition. And it was just it was a destination for guys. Guys would show up on Sunday night for a match the following week. We do 3 days of training with them. They take Thursday off. Then we'd shoot Friday, Saturday, end on Sunday. This was a vacation for people. It was never something meant to make them money. It was never to supplement their hobby. It was fun.
Do you think if there wasn't so much money involved that you wouldn't be attracting the people that are only in it for the money? I mean, where do you think the breakdown happened with the sport going from people that just love doing that and shooting to people that were just in it for the money and weren't interested in the actual sport itself, it seems?
Yes, that created it because they saw the prize table. They saw guys with stuff. I mean, if you look at a picture of a PRS event, half the guys that have the jerseys on, they're not even sponsored. They're just basically showing up to their first match with jerseys with their gear logos on their shirt. Then if they do well, they'll say, hey, I'm promoting your stuff. You know, now give me free stuff. Because when they look at me, you know how it is. I mean, Sniper's High has been around a long time. I get a lot of gear to review and to do stuff. I want that. Why did Frank get a Schmidt and Bender from them? I want the Schmidt and Bender. I'll shoot better than him. And it's like, well, that's not the point. The point is I'm providing a service back. And right, and they're not just giving things to us to be nice.
Right. We run into that a lot.
We run into the same thing. Which the thing that those people forget is Frank was there in 2000 when nobody was giving him shit and he was doing it on his dime. So yes, That's what they forget.
Well, and they forget the amount of hours it takes to run the website, to put in the work, to test the product, to put everything out on social media. It's not like you're getting it for free. I mean, everybody that does anything for anybody knows it costs somewhere, somehow.
And that's exactly it. I mean, I had my match last week before Alaska in Washington. I told them up front, I didn't go to a single one of my sponsors. I actually got reprimanded by sponsors because I didn't want a prize table. What I did is I took my earnings and I put it back and I gave cash to the top three teams. Then I gave to the top junior. And I gave him back cash. So I took all the money I would have made and I handed it to him in cash. And I didn't want to be a hypocrite. I didn't want to basically rant about prize tables and guys taking stuff off the table and then go to my sponsors and say, give me a prize. We had a blast. No, we were laughing even during giving out the little bit that was there. I mean, like Sig stepped up because Sig's part of that community in Washington. And I'm just tossing stuff to people. I'm like, hey, you want a laser, dude? And I raffled it all away. But a girl said, you know, oh, I had my Leopold that didn't quite reach 800 yards. Well, here's a SIG I know, Will. And I just gave them to him. Here you go. Get rid of that and use that. And SIG didn't care.
The part that I find ironic about, and like I said, I'm just looking in, is all those guys – if they're picking off the prize table, they're just going for the thing that they can resell the most to get back to the next event.
Yeah, that's what you said. That's crazy. That's frustrating.
I gave the top competitors cash. Then I called up all active duty military because we had like four teams of active duty guys. I gave them stuff that was there because, like I said, SIG gave a lot. You know, so here's a Ranger getting an AB 2400 kilo. You know, here's a Marine with a leg missing who's doing this stuff, who got stuff. Mm-hmm. I gave those guys first. Then everything. Then I, you know, the juniors came up because I had whole squads of little kids under 15. I gave the juniors prizes after that because they're the future of the sport.
Right.
Then I started tossing the certificates and the things that I had left to the rest of the people. Those guys already have kit. They don't, mm-hmm. you know, if I got Vortex on my shirt and Schmidt and Bender gives me a scope for the prize table and he gets it, he's not going to shoot it in the next match because he's sponsored by Vortex.
Right.
So what good does that do Schmidt and Bender to give me to guys who were sponsored? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to look for somebody who has a, you know, he might have a Weaver Tactical and he's spending his own money. Here, dude, you got a Weaver Tactical? You got it. Amazing. One of the PRS guys after that letter wrote a letter rebutting me. And he attended my 2014 match. I had 7 rifles to give away in that match. I gave the top 308 shooter a 6.5 Creedmoor rifle, custom rifle. Okay. The top 308 shooter was like 48th place. And in his letter, he said, "How dare I give a rifle to 48th place?" He was a top 308 guy. What do you want from me?
You know? He's actually calling the wind.
Yeah. He's going to actually use the product that he wins.
Yeah.
To this day, that kid still competes. I see him every week up in Northern Colorado at the local matches. He uses that 6.5 and he shoots everything in this area. You give a 500-mile radius to him, he's shooting that rifle to this day. Where's the negative in that?
No, there is none. I think that's actually – that money thing I think is a better way to do it than the prize table, because the prize table – seems to be pretty bastardized. You know, it's not really a prize table. It's what can I get the most to sell out of, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of the sport.
Well, most of the time they have a lot. I mean, they have most of that stuff. So there's not anything that they're going to get from that they either don't want or don't already have if they're on that level.
Yeah, totally. And like I said, we've been doing this a long time, man. Like Sniper's Hide is probably one of the longest running continuous matches. Since 2003, 2002, we've had it every year, and we've seen it all. I get it, you know, and so I'm just trying to focus it towards newer people,
right?
So that they don't come away dejected, you know, and see all this stuff. I mean, it's funny with all the TV shows following these guys around. They'll catch them on video cheating and doing stuff. Hey, when the RO turns his back, go over here. He won't see you, and shoot from this spot. And when you show that to the PRS, they turn around and go, "Oh, well, that's just him."
Yeah, I wouldn't like that at all. Yeah. That would make me crazy.
Yeah, cheating shouldn't be accepted. You should be banned for 2 or 3 matches or something. But on the 308 thing, I wish that I've been thinking about shooting PRS or something like PRS, and I wish they'd only allow 308s, because then you actually have to do what you're supposed to do and call a little wind.
Yeah, and you know what? Don't get me wrong. There's great matches out there, but you don't have to pay somebody extra money, another $100 to go shoot it. There's really good matches. There's local matches that are stepping up, and it's raising the level of competition. But that doesn't mean you can't go to a PRS match as just Ryan and shoot it.
Right.
And then take something away from that. I mean, I tell people all the time, that's, you know, hey, ASC in West Virginia, it's not PRS. It's an independent nomad match. It's a bucket list match. Go shoot ASC at least once. You know, hey, you want to do a PRS and see what it's like? Go down to Rifles Only in Texas where they started it. There's CORE, K&M, all really good, interesting places. But you don't have to be that guy. You can go there and learn for yourself and still take something away.
So, nice.
So you mentioned there's a lot of kids coming up into the sport. What about women? Have you seen a big increase in that?
Yeah, definitely. Demographic? Mm-hmm, definitely a lot more women. We had a women team at the Cup or the team challenge. I've had 5 to 7 women in my matches. I mean, Regina Milkovich, she's out of Arizona. She's actually won a PRS event as a woman. She sets the standard. They basically consider her Wonder Woman in this. So there's some really good women shooter out there. A lot less ego, no bad habits to start. And so they absorb it and they do really well. I'm you know, that 14 match that I'm talking about too, first year, I gave a rifle away to the top woman shooter because I had five women competing that year. So I made sure they got a rifle. You know, in the past, the biggest prize a woman shooter had gotten was a Stein.
Yeah, you know? I don't understand why people have beef with that. To me, that's you're planting the seed in them that they want to do this. This is something they can do. This is something that, you know, if you plant the seed of success early, man, I don't see how people can fight you on that.
And you know, you can go husband and wife and go do it. It's something you can do together. It, you know, John McQuay goes with his wife and shoots these matches. John's from 8541 Tactical. He's out there with his wife, and they're putting it together, the two of them at a team. There's the Allens. They're a team down in K&M. There's a lot of husband and wife teams that are doing really well, and it's something you can do. I mean, why not? And there's a couple women that come out, you know, because that's where the men are. It would be like going to a football game. You know, you want to meet a guy, go to a football game. Well, you want to meet a guy who shoots, go to a competition.
Right. Mm-hmm. If me you and her shot in competition together, she'd shoot me.
Yeah, Mary Beth outshot me.
No, I mean, you know? She would literally.
Oh, shoot you, you mean?
Yeah, she would physically shoot me.
Yeah.
I wanted to get your, I guess, not advice. I'm using the wrong words. My brain ain't working so well. But I want to get your thoughts on this 2 mile crazed king of the 2 mile, these 4,000 yard shot record breaking. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll go down to king of 2 mile. The Brits will come over for AI and use my range to practice with. It's getting there. You just had Mitch Fitzpatrick, get a 3-shot group that was within an MOA at 3,600. It 2 mile is all about the ammo. As long as you can get the velocity, and you got the right bullet and you're pushing it hard enough, you can successfully do it. Transonic's becoming a buzzword here in the U.S. That's why we're overspinning a lot of our barrels, you know. Instead of an 8 twist and a 6.5, guys want to do a 7 to shoot farther. You know, the 300 Norma with the military is an 8 twist instead of a 10. You know, they're doing that specifically to shoot past that point of repeatable accuracy. And they're figuring out how to get some repeatable accuracy out of it. And a lot of that has to do with the bullets we're using. It's a doable thing. I've worked with the JTF guys, the Canadians who did that shot everyone's talking about. They're meticulous in what they do. If anybody can do it, those guys can do it.
Like that Canadian side, were they shooting reloads or are they shooting a factory ammo?
They get fancy bullets, man. I wouldn't doubt it with that. I know our military, the SEALs for that rifle, have a monolithic solid. It's Nexus Armory. I think it was TTI before Nexus bought it. Back when I was doing those classes for the military, they use a monolithic solid bullet, custom loaded for them. They're not delinking 50 cal rounds like it used to be, you know? They're using good stuff. And if I understand it right, the guy was leaning against a wall, probably a building. It's hit the wall, see where it hits and move over to the guy and shoot again, you know, so you can really do it. And at 2 miles away, nobody knows you're shooting at them. So it could be a bear bet with some of these guys, you know, it's like, hey, I bet you I can hit that guy. You know,
that's impressive stuff that you put across that 3,000, you know, meter mark. That's a long ways.
But then they just did. They had a world record comp in Texas where they crossed 3,000 and guys got hits. There was a PRS ELR event in Wyoming. Guys were got hits to like 2,600, 2,700. You know, you're seeing more people get repeatable hits at these distances. And you know, I've taken that 6.5 and stuff to past a mile. So here I have a 6.5 Creedmoor and I'm getting repeatable hits at a mile. You know, it's doable.
Do you think that this big craze is good for the sport?
Yes, it's pushing innovation because it's creating wildcats that that 3.75 lethal magnum. It's they're changing shoulders, they're changing bullets. Like I said, it's barrel technology. Let's over twist it. Let's do it a little longer. Gain twist technology. I have 338s that are, you know, left-hand gain twist from Bartlin. So I'm going the opposite direction and I'm twisting it different. All that's creating innovation. How do you going to create a base, the ERA techs, that aren't these tall bases that are stupid looking, you know, they're more of like a cradle. So you're seeing a lot of innovation come out of pushing the envelope.
All right. Well, switching gears a little bit, we come from the hunting side, far less the competitive side.
I could argue against that. I think hunting's pretty competitive.
Oh, hunting is competitive.
Yeah.
The competitive shooting side, I should say. But the craze now is to, you know, the extended range. You know, the 500-yard shot used to be a long-range shot. Now you're looking at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10,000. What would you tell a guy that's getting into that? What would you tell him training-wise? What should he look for? What should he be doing?
Take a class. I mean, you got to be ethical. You got to what you have to do. If you're just out there doing it on your own, you've never set yourself up for failure. You've never come out of your comfort zone. And hunting, I consider hunting out of your comfort zone. It's not prone. You're going to be in some kind of position. And so the thing is, take a class and learn how to maximize those alternate positions you find in hunting. Mary Beth, a, you know, 9-year-old girl, she did 5 out of 10 shots on an 8-inch plate at over 500 yards standing off a tripod.
Wow.
You know, we're learning how to do this because we're investing in these different tripods and what works. And you know, we have hunting guys in Alaska, all those guys hunt and they're taking classes in droves and they're realizing that not only can they push their accuracy out, but they know what they're talking about. They're not relying on a BDC reticle to be right at 800 yards. They know what their dope is. They know how big of a target they can hit first shot. So it's all about education and knowing your dope, knowing that, okay, I practiced at home in the prone, and now I'm going to go to, you know, out and hunt something, and it's 800 yards away, and I got to shoot it from the sitting or kneeling off a log. Well, am I that accurate in that position? And if you take classes, you'll learn to be that accurate in those positions. And I think that's the difference. The calibers are capable, man. Even, you know, up there, 300 Win Mags rule. You can shoot something at 800 yards with a 300 Win Mag if you know what you're doing.
All right. And I told somebody I was going to have you on a podcast, and they told me to ask you, what is the lightest turreted scope that you would trust on the market?
I think the Vortex AMG is the crossover one. That's the lightest, the 6-24.
It's like 25 ounces, something in there, 26
yeah,
ounces.
Yeah, it's a little, it's pretty light. It's not like the, I can look it up. I mean, it's not like the Vortex Razor Gen 2s. It's more the same weight of like a PST. That's probably the lightest one that I would put my money towards would be that Vortex AMG.
All right. And if you had to go to scope that, a scope that you had to throw down the stairs and throw off a cliff and then shoot it, what would that be?
My Schmitz are pretty good that way. The Vortex Gen 2s are good that way. Night Force you can always beat up and they'll be good. I mean, even that 4-16 for lightweight for the Night Force is really good. I trust any one of those three. Unfortunately, you know, the average price of the model I would trust is $2,500 and more.
Right.
You know, if you're spending $1,200, I would be testing it from hell and back before I checked it. But to take it out of the box and say my life depends on this, I'm the Razor Gen 2s, the Night Forces, the Attacker Series, and then Schmidt and Benders.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You can't argue with those names.
You know, I know they're not hunting, but I think they're decent crossover ones there, especially like the Ultra Shorts. You want lighter. Schmidt's got those ultra shorts, which are a lot smaller and lighter than the PM2, the full blown ones. And then Night Force, they've got some light ones with the attackers and stuff. They're not too heavy.
I see on the tripods you really like the Really Right Stuff tripod.
It's weight rating. You know, the Manfrottos we were using, which are issued, have a weight rating for 15 pounds. The Really Right Stuffs are lighter and have a 50-pound weight rating. Wow. So
you can put 50 pounds on those?
Yeah, I mean, I can hang off of them, you know, and I'm only like a pound over, you know. So there's a new one from Hog Saddle. Josh at Hog Saddle has a carbon fiber one that comes out of Norway. Uh-huh. It has a weight rating of 40 pounds and it's only a $350 tripod for the legs. So that would be the lowest cost one. I would say it would carry that way. But it all comes down to weight rating. And once you get, and then that really right stuff has the interface that I like because there's no cantilever in. It's just dropping on the dovetails equal on both sides. But really right stuff has by far exceeded everybody in this part.
I had actually never heard them until I saw yours down there at the FTW, and then I looked into them. They look pretty overbuilt and pretty damn nice.
For camera companies, they're the platinum series when it comes to camera equipment, and they just jumped into shooting. They hired an Army sniper, and they created that SOAR division, and he's just done a great job with crossing over from camera equipment to shooting.
On the optic spotting scope side, spotting hits on targets isn't a lot different than spotting hits on animals. What's your thoughts? What do you like?
Swarovski's the best bang for the buck when it comes for that. I'm using the STR-80 with the reticle. You can get the modular one like we use down at FTW. I think their binos are some of the best on the market. Even the binos with the laser, the ELs that we were using were fantastic. They're fast. They're clear. Gotcha. I do use a lot of Zeiss Heinsoldt stuff. It's more expensive and it's a little bit more bulletproof, but to me, the Swarovski's is definitely money.
What are you packing it with? What are you putting the backpack on your back? I know you, I saw you with the Kafaru the other day.
I had all the old Kafaru. I told you, I knew Patrick and Mel years ago.
Right.
And like the newest one I had was like the Marauder when it first came out.
That's been a while.
Yeah. So what I did is I went the other day before I went to Washington and all that. And on your advice, I went back to and revisited them and grabbed that new Cryptex one. And so for the match that I shot in Washington, I packed everything in the Kafaru in Alaska.
Was that an Ontario? You had an Ontario pack?
I think it's, what is it, Apex maybe? Or
it's I think it's the Ontario. It's a little day pack.
Yeah, it's a little day pack. It's only got limited Molly. And I just went in there and kind of off the shelf. And they were great. I said, listen, I'm going to Washington in 10 days. They had it for me in five. They were completely awesome with that. Yeah, I mean, it was a big upgrade because normally we do a lot of x-rays you'll see in the matches and stuff. But this one was sort of a perfect little crossover for me. And that really right stuff fits right in the water bottle pocket.
Nice.
So if I drop it in upside down with the head down in it, it balances the weight out nicely. Then it has the lock up top. And so I can carry it with no drama. The spotter fits, the whole thing. So, yeah, I'm using the Kafaru.
Nice. Any other packs you used before you liked?
I was using Triple Aught Design for a while. Their fast pack was probably the other primary pack I used. I tried the Eberle Stocker, however they say that. and it's just too big and heavy for me. It's more pack than gear. Gotcha. And so I kind of moved away to these smaller, lighter. For some of the guys in PRS type stuff, a lot of Mystery Ranch.
Yeah, they're that's a great pack too.
Yeah, and that was kind of the flip a coin, but because I'm in Wheat Ridge, Kafaro's in Wheat Ridge, I just go right over and I go walk in the door. So it was a no-brainer to go see Kafaro again.
Yeah, and they have some good stuff coming, and I've been with them a long time, and they are top shelf packs.
Yeah, yeah.
On those classes, are there any out there that you would tell people to go to and look at?
Yeah, definitely Rifles Only. He does a good program. K&M and Core, Tennessee, Florida, they do really good stuff. I mean, if you're up in the western part of the country and you want to do like a Thunder Ranch Hart, the high angle class that he has, I mean, Clint's a bucket list guy to go see. If you want to shoot far and really learn your limitations, gun sights, XLR stuff, I'm a gun sight fan. for their precision rifle. Corey and Will over a Walt over there are really good. So those would be my top five or so.
Nice. Well, Frank, we're pushing an hour, but I wanted to give you time for one question. And I asked you this before. I've talked to tons of people since I met you about you. You're a polarizing individual. People either love you or say you're an asshole. What do you have to say to them?
I am what I am. I'm not going to change now. I tell people the reason is because I'm from Bridgeport and not Birmingham. So I don't have that all shucks going on. You know, if I was more of an all shucks guy instead of a F-bomb kind of, you know, hey, forget about it. You know, what the fuck? And that's what pisses people off. Right. But I have people, and what they don't like is I'll stand up and confront them. I don't shy away. You know, when the question is or that, I'll stand in front of you. If you, you know, if I say it online, I'll say it in real life. And there's some people that like that and some people that hate it. You know, sorry, you know, most of you guys are from down south and I don't have that sort of, like I said, all shucks attitude, not wearing coveralls, you know, and that's just who I am. But
not wearing coveralls.
You know, it is. But I mean, like, you know, there's no free lunches. I went in the Marine Corps. I was 102 pounds. They weren't going to hand me and say, oh, gee, that's Frank, our mascot. It was step up or get the hell out. Right. You know, so I walk the walk. You know, it's not just Frank flapping his gums. Most of those people probably don't even know I was in the Marine Corps, you know,
right?
Because you never hear him say anything about thanks for your service like they would do with someone else, because I just don't push it, you know.
No, you know, those 3 days down to FTW, I see you're loud, you're blunt, you can be obnoxious, but you help people. I that's the part that cracks me up is it's not like you're just being an asshole and then you don't help people. You helped everybody there at some point during those shoots.
And I had experience with those rounds. I mean, 6 Creedmoor was new. I've had a 6 Creedmoor for 6 years. Why wouldn't I say, here's your dope, here's your win. And when we're having a little comp, you know, hey, I'll win dummy for you. I don't care. I'll help out. And you know, I shoot every week. I do all this. Right. To me, that's the, you know, a shooting vacation's really not a shooting vacation. I'm working still. And I like helping people that way. I enjoy seeing guys get hits. I enjoy, you know, if you're sitting there missing, and I'm sitting back kind of snickering, well, then right. I'm a dick. Right. But if I see you're missing off the edge and say, hey, man, hold a half mil to the right.
Right.
You know, well, how hard is that? What does that take away from me if I hit on the third shot, but I helped you hit on the second?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything. That help the guy. You know, I've done it locally here. There was a guy missing everything, had all the gear, none of the thing. I stopped my stage. I took him off to the side and I shot a freaking mag with him to teach him what to do. Then he started hitting stuff. It takes nothing away from me. I don't care where my name is on a roster. If I came in 5th or 25th, who cares? You know, I've done this long enough. I 99% of the people who think I'm an asshole never met me.
Mm-hmm. That's an absolute fact. And you not only do you help people, you know what you're talking about. I came from all MOA. We had all mil scopes down there, or at least the one I was using was mil. You helped me at least 50 times on the mil calls because I had no idea what I was doing with mils. And it wasn't like you're coming from a place of superiority. You're just saying, hey, this is what I would do. This is what I'm doing. So that's refreshing to me.
Well, and I appreciate that. You know, and like I said, I'm not rude to that. I'm not like, you know, I may crack a joke at your expense or somebody else's
and
expense.
I'm
going
to do it to you too. So that's right. Fine.
I mean, if I'm not talking to you, I don't like you.
Yes.
If I'm cracking a joke about it, you know what I mean? And making fun of you a little bit. Oh, I think you're all right. And I'm going to help and make fun of you. If that makes you butt hurt and you're going to go away and say Frank was a dick because he made a joke at my expense. Well, odds are I thought you were pretty decent. And I wanted to help and do all that. But, you know, once I've kind of said my piece and formed my opinion and spoke to you, if I don't like you, I really don't talk to you for the rest of the time. You know, I'll just leave you alone, let you do your thing. I'll run in my lane. And that's the one thing I learned in this industry, as I stay in my lane. You know, I'm not going to try to tell you how to hunt, and I'm not going to tell a handgunner how to shoot his handgun. I stay in my lane. And if I know a little bit more about that, I'll tell you. If that offends you because I corrected something you're doing, hey, man, sorry about that.
Right. And you weren't rude in your correcting or helping. You just argue more when you're just bullshitting back and forth.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because then we're having fun. I want to entertain me as much as the next guy. You know, I'm there to have fun. And that's kind of how we always were. I mean, and you know, in the military, when you're sitting around, it's character assassination time. It's this, it's, you know, and that's how you sort of sharpen some of that. If you can't take it, I mean, that's the thing with state platoons in the Marine Corps. You can pass everything, you know, and you're ready to step to the next level and be in that billet. If they don't like you, they're not going to let you come into the unit. You're going to be the most highly trained guy in a line platoon, you know. But if they like you, well, then come on in. Like I said, I didn't do what I did because they thought I was cute or funny. They did because I held my own. You know, the funny part was just icing on the cake.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't, like I said, I don't mind. I'm happy to be your villain.
Jason, all right. I do have one more question. What happened the first night of the FTW that night at the bar?
You know what? Either that just hit me wrong or what? Personally, I think I might have got a little Visine for pissing some people off that day. But who knows? Honestly, I haven't drank since.
Frankie, I'll tell the story. He got a little heavy on the sauce, and he told me the same story four times. It was hilarious.
Oh, you know what? It snuck up on me. I don't know if that stuff, because that was some off-brand whiskey, and who the hell knows what it was, but it definitely snuck up on me.
It was probably old.
It happens to all of us.
You know what? I personally think Ryan roofied me to try to get me in the room.
Well, you were one door away, but you locked it, you son of a bitch.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that was the rule. I should have left it unlocked. But I figured you roofied me is what happened.
Well, you know, Marines, I'm Army, you're Marines. It's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It was a weird one. I don't, like I said, it took me off guard, put it that way.
Yeah, I was talking to you, and then all of a sudden you were with it. You were in the spirit world.
Yes, yeah. It was crazy.
Frank, where can people find you?
Snipershide.com.
Snipershide.com? Great.
Yeah, that's the easiest way. In the forum, I'm low light, so you could PM me and send me any notes and do anything you want. Give me hate mail. I get that quite a bit. I like posting it.
What social media platforms are you on if people just want to stalk you silently?
Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The Facebook and Instagram are probably the most popular, but Twitter kind of there by default. Mm-hmm. Either Frank Galley on Facebook or Sniper's Hide on Facebook. Okay. So I post a lot of the pictures and stuff, and then they get shared back and forth.
And your show, what do you, Show Light? What's your Instagram?
SH Low Light. It's Sniper's Hide Low Light. SH Low Light on YouTube and all that. So usually if you can't find me under Low Light, it's under SH for Sniper's Hide Low Light. Is probably the easiest way to find me.
And you have a hell of a YouTube channel on Sniper's Hide. A lot of good information.
Yeah, that gets updated quite a bit. A lot of videos, 100 and something videos on YouTube for sure.
All right, nice. Frank, well, we appreciate you coming on.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, that was a good time.
All right, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. Frank's a pretty funny guy. So I just want to let everybody know that we have a YouTube channel, Avery Adventures. We're also starting to load our hunting videos on there. I think we have 6 or 7 that I'll be loading on over the next couple months, and hopefully we'll have some more from this year. So not only do we have most all of our podcasts on YouTube where you can watch them, we're also going to start to have hunting videos, and Tanya's put up a few tech tips as far as hunting with a spouse, how she organizes before we go hunting. And anyways, we'd appreciate you going on there, Avery Adventures on YouTube, and subscribing. Or you can go to AveryAdventures.com and you can find everything that we're doing. So we'd appreciate that also. Thanks.